Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta. Hello and welcome to Talking Eds. I'm Hannah Bland, your host for today's session. In this program, we're going to be looking at the important issue of student support within particularly the formal higher education sector and universities. As students and as educators, we are aware of the complex reality that learners live in and how the demands, environments and communities in our universities affect the success of our education initiatives. In short, the access, approach and achievements of our learners can't be separated from their lived realities and the responsibilities of their everyday lives. From our panel today, we welcome back Tony Mitchell from the Talking Eds team, who worked as a student hub assistant within the support services at a Scottish university.
Hello.
Hi. And we're also very lucky to have our fellow student Jodie Morrison joining us as our guest. Jodie worked in a university in the north of England as a support officer providing pastoral care, particularly with international students, and has previously worked teaching English literacy and language to many different types of learners, but also refugees and migrants in the UK. Welcome to you, Jodie.
Hi.
So, Jodie, first, can you tell us briefly what is student support services? What role do you play in the university?
So student support services, I think, first of all, varies widely depending on what context you're in. And even actually, if you're talking about universities or higher education in the UK, from university to university, it's quite varied. And then within universities, from department to department, it also varies quite a lot. Mm-hmm. But my role was to really, I guess, help students with anything that was getting in the way of their learning, I guess you could term it like that. So personal issues that they were experiencing, issues around, you know, mental well-being, stress, anxiety. Though I wasn't a trained counsellor, so I was kind of intermediary in between, I guess, an administrator and a counsellor. I would, you know, I had some training and I would refer students on when I felt it was necessary to different support services and professionals.
Wow. How was that for you as somebody who hadn't had the training to be dealing with such issues?
Yeah, well, when I first started, which was, I guess, say around 6 or 7 years ago, there wasn't any training. And I think I joined at quite a good time because just when I joined, people in roles similar to mine, there was quite a lot of growing unrest amongst student support officers at the uni because they were being asked to deal with quite sensitive issues and they weren't given any training or support. But then just after I joined, they kind of started to look at this. By they, I mean, I guess, university officials. Okay. And they started to provide some training, some sort of mental health training, and support and guidance training to us. So that really helped. It's really, really vital, I think, that you have that.
Yeah, that's great. Tony, did you have training in your role, or was your role slightly different?
I did have a degree of training. My role was probably different to Jodie's in that we had an office where students could come with their initial queries, and we were the people that they would come to. And so really my role was to listen to the students and then direct them on to the different services, you know, to work out between the student and I what they needed. And as Jodie said, it's such, student support is such a wide area, so it can be academic and study skills support. You know, students who just need support with their essay writing or their critical reading or, you know, structuring, grammar, whatever it happens to be. So you have that type of support. You also have, sometimes it's financial issues. So they need a bit of financial advice or assistance. And they need to speak to the people that can advise them there. You know, for some students, there can be hardship funds available if they're finding themselves in financial hardship. As Jodie mentioned, you have the counselling aspect as well. Mental health, nursing staff we had who could deal, you know, who could speak to students and help them out with any particular issues they had in relation to their mental health. Disability and inclusion, so you're talking about learning disabilities, dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, These types of conditions, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, you know, sort of complex learning difficulties that people need specialist help with. So we had educational psychologists who could come in to diagnose and create learning plans for students. And then there was also a support team who could work out what kind of technological support students could have, what kind of assistance they could get. Sometimes students needed extra time in exams and that type of thing as well. So really, it's such a varied area. You have to when a student would walk into the office, it could be, you know, the query could really be anything. So it was about speaking to them, working out what their needs were, and then referring them on to the correct person to take it further and to help them.
That's really strange that it's such diverse needs and how you would deal with that in one place. And I noticed that here in Malta University, there's loads of different sort of places you could go to, and the support services website points you to, you could go specifically for disability help or counselling or sexual harassment or bullying. There's like a specific office for each one. But Jodie, you said that you specifically helped international students. Was that something formalised, or was that just who you were taking in?
The department that I worked in basically provided only master's degrees, and the nature of the topic area was such that it meant we had, I think maybe about 85% of our cohort were international students, which I really loved. That was, you know, I stayed often, I think, well, at the university I worked at, you might sort of move on and move up, you know, a few years into each role, but I stayed there for quite a long time because it was quite a unique kind of department in that I was working with so many international students, and it was just really varied and interesting and different every day. But also, I think because international students need a different kind of support, and I guess I built up expertise in the kind of support that they needed, and that's another reason that I stayed.
Yeah, well, as an international student here in Malta, I can definitely sort of agree with that. Mm-hmm. Moving away from your home, but also into a new society and dealing with things here and understanding your new context, I can understand how that would be a very different set of problems. But do you think there's any sort of problem with compartmentalizing student groups?
I can see where that question's coming from, but no, essentially, I don't think there is. I think that it is for the students' benefit to receive tailored support, basically. And just like you said, international students are experiencing very different, you know, problems from local or home students. It's so difficult, you know, coming to a new country as it is, never mind having to navigate all of these very bureaucratic systems, because they are, let's face it, you know, you've got your visa sort out, you've got to enroll, you've got to make sure you're registered correctly and everything, you've got to find a doctor, you know, there's so many things you've got to do. While you're probably feeling quite homesick and a bit stressed out and a bit anxious, or very, very anxious and very homesick. So it can be really, really hard. I think as long as you provide that tailored support at the same time as doing work to help to integrate international students into their community and with the local and home students, and also, you know, the actual community that live in that location, I think that's really important. And as long as both are happening at the same time, I don't think there's any problem with separating out the support.
Yeah, I would agree with Jodie there. I think it's necessary to compartmentalise the support services because the needs are so different sometimes and so specific for certain students. And as we've said, with international students in particular, I mean, for every student, there's the academic, the social, the personal aspect. For international students, they have the language, culture, you know, these additional things, as we say, trying to access health services, just the new bureaucracy and systems that they encounter as well. And for some students as well, they can find themselves, international students I think in particular, are quite vulnerable sometimes to becoming quite isolated, you know, for all kinds of reasons, cultural reasons among those. And I remember something that happened to me was that when I was working in the office, I would get to recognise, some people would come in more often, some students, and you would get to recognise those students. And then outside of the university, I volunteered to take part in an event, which was at Christmas time, and it was providing meals for homeless and isolated and vulnerable people. And then I was quite shocked because one of the students turned up at the event.
Yeah.
So I asked the organisers, you know, the people that come here, what, how did they find out about it? How did they get here?
And also providing, you know, ways for them to meet each other. I mean, in my context specifically, it was quite good that there were mostly international students because they were from all over the world, but they were kind of like us. We have, you know, our own network of support. Mm. They were with people, lots of other people that were going through the same issues and having to do the same, jump through the same hoops in terms of bureaucracy. But, you know, if you might be an international student in a department where there aren't many international students and you might have just come on your own, and that can be, like you say, really isolating, and it can have a really huge effect on your mental health, I think. So providing not only, I guess, maybe professional support, but I think this is where things like student unions and societies are really important, because they can, often they'll provide, you know, events or societies, clubs, groups of people for international students to meet and just realise that, yeah, they're not alone. And I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because also for international students, they sometimes have issues in terms of their visa. They can't just go home and visit their family sometimes, mm-hmm. Or even if they want to invite family or friends to come and visit them, it's not always possible. So if possible, you know, for those students to become involved in student associations, societies, those type of things, to create, you know, a network of friendship and support, and that can be very helpful too.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of advice you would give people that were coming to talk to you in your previous roles, to join societies and students' union?
Although I think it's a good idea, you know, in my role certainly it wasn't particularly my job to give anyone particular advice other than to work out which service could help them or which service they needed to access. Mm. So I was probably not quite as involved in giving advice maybe as Jodie would have been. So I had to be careful about advising students, because I didn't have the specialist knowledge to do that, and it wasn't really seen to be part of my role. Sometimes you have to be careful about what advice you do or don't give.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, I can see how that would be an issue, providing the right advice and support without overstepping your role.
Absolutely.
I think now it's time for some music. We're going to have a little break. So as usual, I'm going to ask our guest, Jodie, to choose the music. So Jodie, what have you chosen and why?
It's a piece called Music for a Found Harmonium. It's being performed here by the Penguin Cafe Orchestra, which is a great name. To be honest, I couldn't decide at all what to choose, and I've got a friend that's very musical, so I was asking him for some advice, and he suggested this, and I have heard it before. It's from one of my favourite films, Napoleon Dynamite, so I just thought that was perfect.
Okay, great. Here we go. Thanks for that, Jodie. That was certainly a jaunty piece of music. Welcome back to Talking Eds, where we're talking. This program is about student support services. Joining us is Tony Mitchell and Jodie Morrison, who have both worked in universities in the UK providing student support. So welcome back to you both.
Thank you.
So we've just been talking about the amazing support services at universities, and they seem like there's a lot out there that students can access. And I'm just wondering now, what sort of barriers to access are there? Like, why aren't people using them where they could be?
I think on a general level, first of all, one sort of issue or barrier is resources. So I think mental health is a growing concern in UK universities, which is, you know, and that's tied up with rising fees, you know, increased pressure on students to get graduate jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think for the whole student population, often accessing the service, a student might want to access the service, but there might be a 12-week waiting list, or there might not be anyone you know, available to see them when they need, at the time that they need. So that's one. And also, you know, I think it's sometimes difficult to diagnose yourself and to know when you need help, what kind of help you need. Though I think that is improving in the UK anyway, in the UK context. But for me, in my specific context, working with international students, there were another set of barriers, I think, in terms of cultural norms for a lot of the students that I worked with. They might come from parts of the world where mental health isn't really an issue. It's not talked about, it's not discussed, you know, stress in the way that perhaps we know it from the UK. You know, you might take work off, you might be on sick leave for stress for a few months' time in the UK, but in certain parts of the world, I don't think it is, you know, recognised as a medical condition in the same way, similar to anxiety and depression. And even where it is, you know, there are other places where it's not, there's a very, very big stigma still attached to it. So with international students, sometimes they might struggle to even understand what they're feeling. They might not have ever felt it before. They might have never moved away from home and studied an intensive master's course, which is an incredible thing to do, and it's very difficult. So it might be the first time they're experiencing this. They might not understand what's happening to them, or they might be, you know, feeling shame or guilt that they're struggling, that they should find it easier. And I think something that maybe we would all sort of would resonate with all of us, it's easy to look around and think that everyone else is absolutely fine and on top of things, having a great time, really mentally well, and that's not at all the case. So something I would find myself saying time and again to students in one-to-one situations is, you know, I might tell them the number of students from their department that have been in to see me that term, for example. And I found that often really helped and was often shocking to them, because they just look at their colleagues and they don't see any of that. And I'm like, well, I've seen six students this week, you know, from that module. So obviously not naming names, because confidentiality is a huge issue, something you've always got to be thinking about. But just knowing how many people are just need a bit of help, and there's no problem with that. That's completely normal. That's part of the human experience. So
yeah, I can see that. That with the numbers, that would really help, because it's about normalizing it. And I think, well, in terms of culturally, I can see that being an issue. But even in the UK, it's still taboo, even though we talk about it. And I think it was really good here in the induction week when the counselling service actually came in to talk to us and sort of said, you know, we're here. You've already got this 15 sessions for you, like as if we're already entitled by it. We don't have, there's nothing wrong with us necessarily, but we may as well use it. And I thought that was a really positive step. Like, how did your universities and your experiences sort of break this barrier and like get into the students and normalise it?
Yeah, but there was lots of promotion of the services within the university where I studied and where I worked later as well. They were very good at having promotional events. For instance, they had a mental health week, you know, where it was every day a different event. There would be lots of posters and flyers and information stalls, that kind of thing. Even on the student desktops, you know, the message would come up at the start of the day promoting the event. And then, or they would have, even at exam time, they had a thing called the Therapets, where an organisation came in with dogs on campus, so that students could pet the dogs, because this is therapeutic in times of stress. So it's all about having the big events and the little events as well, but just keeping up the constant awareness to let students know that these services are available. Please use them if you feel that you need to use them. So that's important, and I think certainly at the institution where I studied and worked, they were good at doing that.
Yeah, similar to our experience in induction week, actually, with us and with international students, the really key thing was talking about it as early as possible. So like you mentioned, that we had someone talk to us in induction week about mental health. That's what I used to do with our students, just because the problem very, very often was that students wouldn't come to see you until things had got really, really bad. And if they had come to see you months before, you know, they could have said, it could have been a lot different. And often it might even be things, especially with international students, like you were saying earlier, Tony, the It might be that they need some extra academic support. Some, you know, they might need to go and see the library skills team that helped with academic writing, especially, you know, for people for whom English isn't their first language. But those things, if they're left to fester, they can start to make somebody unwell. You know, they can really get people down. And if that goes on for months and months, then it changes into a mental health issue because they don't feel like they're performing as well as they're used to performing in their home context. So if the earlier you can get that and provide services, the better. So, yeah, I think early as possible is the key.
And it seems like stress can be affecting like so many aspects of their lives, and they would need support from different parts of the university. So if they're going to the library for academic support, and then, like you said, it might turn into like more of a mental health issue, they might want to access counselling. You might also want to talk to the course designers about the type of things that the demands that they have. So how much sort of collaboration is there among the different university services outside of support services as well?
Yeah, I think it's very important that there is a degree of collaboration, that people are talking to each other internally, you know, whilst respecting confidentiality and those kind of issues. Because although people need specific support in certain areas, sometimes they might need support in more than one area. And then it makes sense, you know, for different departments or different services to liaise to make sure that they are providing the best possible support and solution for the students.
Yeah, similarly, in my institution, there was, yeah, quite a lot of good, like, joined up working that went on amongst the different services. So student support was a big umbrella, and underneath that would come counselling, disability services, library staff, you know. But I think part of my role specifically was helping to link all of that together on site, if you know what I mean, within the department. So I was the liaison for those different services between them and the students, because obviously I think it's good for a student to be able to go and access some tailored support from a professional that might know, you know, a lot about dyslexia or might be a trained counsellor. But then when they leave that service and that professional, they come back to the department and they're in there every day. So I think it's good for them to have someone that they know, a face they see in the department every day, that is also aware of these issues and that is linking everything, that provides the link.
Yeah, that would make sense. So safety in some ways.
Because often the initial disclosure, it may happen that a student has a meeting, they might set up a meeting with a member of the academic staff to talk about what initially is just seen to be an academic issue, but then a disclosure, you know, could be made about a different problem, you know, any other aspect, any other area of their social or personal life. And so the academic has to know how to deal with that or who to then refer the student on to get the appropriate help. So this is why there has to be the collaboration and the understanding right across, you know, the whole, every department of the institution.
I suppose earlier, Jodie, you were saying that the resources is a real big issue, and there's a big waiting list and difficult to access the support services. So I'm wondering, in reality, how much can this collaboration happen? How often do academics really put in the time, or the different services do branch out of their duties?
Absolutely. I think the system breaks down sometimes, but in the main, people are aware. Everyone has a duty of care within an institution, you know, toward the students, and everyone is aware of their duty of care. And so in the main, although no system is 100% effective, I think from what I've seen from my experience, it's worked well.
Yeah, as long as you have, you know, I don't think that you can expect academics to necessarily be trained in dealing with mental health issues, but as long as they all know where to signpost to if something is disclosed, then I think that's the best you can hope for, really. But I think it's really important for support staff and academic staff to keep a really close working relationship with that. And sometimes that works better than other times, but I think it's something that, because mental health is a growing issue, concern in UK unis anyway, it's something that does seem to be, people are becoming more and more aware of it in my experience, yeah, which is good.
Yeah, that's brilliant. But I'm just thinking now, if the demand is increasing, like if we're trying to encourage more students to see it as normal and to take down the barriers, would there not be maybe too many students accessing the student support, and what would this mean for the universities?
I think that's quite an accurate description of the actual situation at the moment, certainly where I was working. That is exactly what is happening. It's a combination of things. It's people being really good at making people aware of mental health issues and other support needs, you know, disability support needs. But then it's also, as I was saying earlier, to do with the rise in fees and the added pressure now on students to get their money's worth. That's a really stressful thing to, you know, cross to bear. So I think I don't really know what will happen with this, because they're not staffing, in my context, they don't have the resources, the money to provide double the staff, which is really what they need. So I'm not sure where this situation is going to end up, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you said sort of getting their money's worth. Like, that's a weird way to talk about education.
Yes.
I think, do you think this is partly because of the fees, entirely because of the fees, or?
I think it's in large part due to the fees. That's another issue with, in specifically for the UK context, with when the fees for English students, should I say, because it's not the same in Scotland, but when the fees were tripled and students were paying, are now paying £27,000 instead of £9,000 for their three-year course.
Wow.
Then, you know, that really turns the whole experience on its head, and it becomes like a transaction almost, and students are increasingly being seen as customers, and maybe even seeing themselves as customers, because and understandably so in a way, because they're getting into a huge amount of debt in order to do this. So that's something that's also really changing the dynamic at universities at the moment.
So I'm sure that we could carry on talking about this for quite a while, particularly with the, now that we're getting into marketization of higher education. But I'm afraid that's the end of our session today. So I want to thank our panel, Tony Mitchell and Jody Morrison, for coming in and sharing your experience with us of higher education and working in student support. And thank you to our technician, Samuel. And yeah, that's it. So thank you for listening. And the Talking Ed series is available online at multiuniversitybroadcasting.com. Thank you and goodbye.